Hello everyone and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by Shoshin Works, a global firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As organizations become increasingly complex and interconnected, success depends not only on advanced technologies, but on the integrated knowledge and risk management systems that enable resilient decision-making across diverse stakeholders. Traditional approaches that treat knowledge management, risk assessment, and financial optimization as separate functions are insufficient for the scale and complexity of modern federal programs and aerospace operations. Today, we are examining how systematic knowledge management and enterprise risk frameworks can foster organizational ecosystems that adapt, learn, and optimize performance in the face of uncertainties. We will discuss how lessons from large-scale federal transformation programs can inform approaches to aerospace innovation, mission assurance, and the management of complex multi-stakeholder space initiatives. I am Marco Annunziata, the founder of Annunziata Desai Advisors, and I am joined today by Jason Graham, Director of Enterprise Risk and Knowledge Management for the Financial Management Business Transformation Program at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Jason is an Army veteran with over 20 years of experience spanning military operations and federal program management. Jason, let's, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Marco.
Can I ask you to start by giving a little bit more of your background and how you came through your experience to be passionate and interested in these topics?
Yeah, sure. So I started out as a combat arms officer focused on field artillery as a delivery system in the United States Army. But the thing that was interesting in terms of the application of the subject we're talking about today is that field artillery, by its very essence, goes hand in hand with this subject matter because fires, if you will, or artillery is all about synchronization, timing, putting the mass amount of effects on an intended target at the precise time and location to support maneuver operations, things like infantry, tanks, things of that nature. So coming into this space, I already had an operational background that focused on synchronization, coordination, breaking down those silos, doing things very cross-functionally. And I think that as I transitioned from my military experience to working for the Department of Veterans Affairs, I found that to be very useful. Reeling it back just a little bit, I worked at a very strategic level in my last several years in the Army, where I was working at a strategic level, doing things such as advising ambassadors, working at core level operations, theater wide. So it was a larger scope, but it required significant levels of synchronization, coordination across multi-functional work streams. So I think, you know, when you take a look at the scale of what I've been involved in has been significant. But I've also been involved in scales that are specifically project-based. Now, what I'm doing right now is a program-level implementation, but it is a very large program in terms of its scale and scope. It is scheduled to go into the next several years. It's already been going for a few years. And, you know, certainly we meet different challenges as we go along, but I think it's been a worthwhile effort, and I think it will bring added value to veterans as we move forward.
I think it will be extremely impactful. And Jason, given that it's a broad-ranging and complex effort, as always in this case, perhaps it's worth starting by defining the concept. It's a concept. Knowledge management is a concept that might sound intuitive, but sometimes that can be misleading. So why don't you start off by defining it for the audience? What is knowledge management?
Sure. So let's kind of start off and set the stage in a way that really could resonate with our audience. So I would just like you and your listeners to imagine this. Imagine a bustling control room equipped with multiple large screens displaying dynamic data from various ongoing missions, right? Teams of engineers and scientists and program managers are seated at workstations, each equipped with computers that provide access to NASA's comprehensive knowledge repositories and collaboration tools. So that's kind of setting the stage. You know, in one corner, maybe there's a video conference screen where teams from different NASA centers and international partners communicate in real time, sharing insights and updates. They're using advanced collaboration tools and discussing lessons learned from previous missions to improve current outcomes. And then across the room, there's a team of knowledge managers that's working on updating and categorizing information in centralized digital libraries. They're tagging documents from research papers, technical diagrams, and mission reports with metadata for easy retrieval. And then on another screen, a dashboard analysis displays metrics, analytics, you know, kind of an executive dashboard, if you will, showing the usage and accessibility of the KM system, highlighting popular documents and areas where further knowledge capture is required. There's a meeting space where team members are brainstorming and sharing strategies for upcoming missions, using whiteboards, digital tools to capture and later document crucial insights. So this is kind of what WRITE looks like, if you will, within the space of what the listeners are kind of hoping to see when it comes to knowledge management. This environment.
It's an excellent way of setting the stage, by the way. It's an excellent way of helping to visualize what we're talking about, the complexity of it.
Sure. And, this environment exemplifies an integrated approach to knowledge management with technology, processes, and culture, which I'm going to hit on a lot as we go throughout this. Culture converged to support NASA's complex and large-scale projects. So that's kind of setting the stage. But going back to your original question, you know, what is knowledge management, right? Well, I think we can define it by saying what knowledge management is and what knowledge management is not. So let's first talk about what knowledge management is, because I think there can be sometimes a misunderstanding when we talk about knowledge management. There's knowledge management, and then there's information management. And I think a lot of times we fall into a trap where we just treat it as information management and don't truly put it into that application process where it is truly knowledge management. So going back, this is kind of what knowledge management is. It's a systematic process. You know, it captures and distributes and effectively uses knowledge. It involves organizing information and knowledge to make it accessible and useful. So that's the first thing. The second thing, knowledge management involves organizational strategy. It's a strategic approach. It's aimed at enhancing organizational performance by leveraging collective knowledge. It aligns closely with organizational goals and initiatives. And sometimes that doesn't always take place as people are going through trying to implement a KM. It's also aimed at value creation, right? The primary goal of KM should be to create value by improving decision-making, fostering innovation, reducing redundancy, and enhancing efficiency through better knowledge utilization. And you don't always get that as well. So these are some of the things that we can work on to make that business process, if you will, better for people. And then just a few more things. I think I have like three other points in terms of what we feel knowledge management is within the community. Technology enabled. We all know that, right? The use of technology such as databases, intranets, content management systems, collaboration tools to facilitate knowledge, storage, sharing, and retrieval. These things have to be in lockstep with our processes and make sure that they're mutually supportive. That cultural component I was talking about earlier, we've got to promote an environment where knowledge sharing is encouraged and rewarded. Doing that seeks to break down silos and create a knowledge sharing culture. So it's incredibly important. And then, as with all things, and you see this in risk management, knowledge management, it's almost kind of a project management 101 piece. And that is following everything up with continuous process. Knowledge management's ongoing. It's evolving. It requires continuous improvement, feedback loops, and adaptation to change knowledge needs based on the organization. So when I talk about what knowledge management is, that's what we're looking at. Now, I'll take a breath and get into what we feel that knowledge management is not. And I think it's also important to talk about what knowledge management is not, right? Because this is where a lot of misunderstandings occur. What knowledge management is not, it's not just information technology. It's way more than just implementing IT systems. When technology plays a crucial role, KM also involves people, process, cultural change, and strategy. And those soft skills, those soft aspects, if you will, are quite often left out when people approach trying to put a proper knowledge management system in place in an organization. Static documentation. The documentation is not static. It has to be living. It's not about documenting information and storing it away in some share file buried six clicks deep that no one ever looks at again as an archive. It's about making information live, constantly updated, and readily accessible for those who need it. It's also not a one-time project. It's not a one-off initiative or a project that can be completed and forgotten. It's a continuous effort that needs ongoing attention and resources. And I would tell you, if there's anything through what we're going to be talking about here, it's going to have to do with culture, and it's going to have to do with continuous. Those two words, more than anything else, I think, are essential to any knowledge management program that is going to be successful within any organization. Also, it's not solely the responsibility of IT or knowledge management professionals. It takes everyone. Successful KM requires involvement from all levels of an organization, including leadership, management, and individual employees. It truly does take a village to get this accomplished. It's not just data collection either. That's not just about collecting data. It's about turning data into useful knowledge, interpreting it, and applying it to solve problems and make informed decisions. You have to do that. And then automatic success. Just having one and applying these principles does not guarantee success. There has to be some expectation management here. It requires careful planning, alignment with business goals, user training, and a culture, there's that word again, that supports knowledge sharing. So I know that's an extremely long answer to your question, but that's really what we feel knowledge management is and what it is not.
Now, it's an excellent way of putting it, because it starts to clear up some potential misunderstandings, as you've noted, Jason, starting from the fact that instinctively many of us think of knowledge as almost synonymous with information. But knowledge, as you've noted, is a lot more, knowledge in itself is a lot more than information. And then once you get into the knowledge management phase, you're adding a lot more dimensions and a lot more layers of complexity. So that's it's an excellent way to get us grounded. So how do you build it? How do you set it in place? How do you analyze the different components and then start building a right knowledge management system?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So, you know, we've talked about the theory, but there are some key components of what knowledge management is. And they're very doctrinal. And I think that there's a step action way of implementing this that involves these critical components. And the components that I'm talking about are, you know, the first one would be a systematic process, which involves capturing, storing, sharing, and utilizing. So, well, what do I mean by that? Well, basically, I'm talking about identifying and recording valuable information and expertise from various sources, including employees, documents, processes, and external data. So that's the capture piece of that systematic process. The second piece is storing that, organizing and storing knowledge in accessible formats and repositories to ensure, and this is a key word, right? Easy retrieval. You've heard of the three-click rule, if you will. You shouldn't have to go deeper than three folders to find anything. Sometimes easier said than done, but it is possible and can be put into place. And that way, things don't become archived unintentionally. Yeah. Sharing. Facilitating the flow of knowledge within an organization through collaboration tools, meetings, and informational networks. You got to get that out there. Utilization, encouraging and enabling the practical application of knowledge in decision-making, problem solving and innovation. So those four things are involved in the systematic process: capturing, storage, sharing, and utilization.
It's a very, very holistic approach. That is what strikes me in the description of the systematic processes. From the very beginning, from when you capture the information, you're already thinking of what it's for, how right. It needs to be shared and used. So that there is really a comprehensive approach to this, which feels hugely important.
I think it is. And, you know, we talk a lot about design theory. And what is design and what is the problem statement? Starting out with, you know, what are we trying to accomplish in the first place? What's our vision? What's our organizational goal? You've got to take those things into account as you build this out. And I'm glad we're talking about this because it kind of really goes into that second tenet or component of KM, which is, guess what? Organizational strategy, right? It talks about goal alignment. Is included in the organizational strategy. The initiatives within your KM system have to be aligned with the strategic objectives of the organization. Otherwise, you aren't going to enhance overall performance and competitiveness. Also, you have to have resource optimization. You know, we always talk about resources. We never, in any situation, have unlimited resources. And we find ourselves in a world of competing resources and finite resources more and more every day, almost indiscriminate in terms of what field of work you're in or what you're addressing. So that resource optimization becomes more and more important. You've got to utilize knowledge assets to optimize resources and reduce redundancy and improve overall efficiency. And we've had some success in doing that. A lot of times it's just been applying common sense to areas that have not had a light shined on them and applying some of these principles. It's not necessarily, and I think it's kind of funny that I'm going to say this given the audience of the podcast, but it's not rocket science. It really is. It's people, process, and technology. And we say it over and over again in many different facets, but I think that's important to hammer there. I've got a few more components in terms of the practical application. So if you'll bear with me, I'll just...
Go for it.
We want
the full picture.
All right, great. So the third one would be value creation. All right, so how are we getting value? Well, we do that through innovation, efficiency, and decision support. So with innovation, we're leveraging organizational knowledge to drive innovation, develop new products, and improve services. With efficiency, we are enhancing productivity by ensuring that employees, again, quick access to the information and expertise they need. And then decision support, providing accurate and timely information to support decision-making processes at all levels. We used to have an example back in the Army where a commander had a thing called commander's critical information requirements. And those were the things that the staff knew the commander had to have in order to achieve mission success. So if something came across the Tactical Operations Center that hit one of those CCIRs, if you will, or critical information requirements, that was immediately elevated to the top, socialized, and disseminated accordingly so the commander could make a right decision at the right time and the right place. And the same principle applies here. Otherwise, you're just dealing with information management, not knowledge management. Technology, it's, you know, technology enabled. This system has to have the right tools in place to do this. And this goes through tools and platforms, talking about implementing knowledge management systems, KMSs, databases, content management systems, also known as CMS, and collaboration tools to support KM activities. Here's one that's a really hot topic in the community right now: automation. Mm-hmm. How are we utilizing technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning to automate knowledge and capture dissemination? Because certainly we as humans are not always 100% of the time going to pick up on a CCIR if it comes across the board. But if we have that machine learning in place to pick up on some of those key things, we can decrease our decision cycle and make ourselves more responsive to deliver the right information at the right time so a person can make a decision that needs to.
If I can ask you to pause on this for a second, sure. Jason, I wanted to ask you, exactly because there is so much emphasis and so much excitement today on the potential of artificial intelligence. Machine learning is one element of it. Then right now the hype of generative AI has kind of stolen the show. But there is a lot of superficial excitement on the idea that these systems can essentially magically solve any information or knowledge problem that we have, and a lot more to boot.
Yeah,
that is not the case. But what I wanted to ask you is, what's your assessment of where we stand now? What are you seeing in terms of progress in applying these new tools to these knowledge management strategies? Where are we? Where are you seeing progress, and how do you see it evolving?
Yeah, well, I think right now we are trying to move through a cultural shift. There is a legacy business process that's in place, which is still trying to learn how to essentially spell artificial intelligence, let alone put it into place. And then there is also, on the other end, a community that is so excited about artificial intelligence, they are trying to put applications in place before establishing governance guardrails on it in terms of, what are our controls? What are our mitigations? What do we have in place to ensure that this tool is working for us as opposed to not meeting an intent? So right now, what I'm finding, and you know, again, going back to the Army, just because I spent 30 years in it almost, I would tell you that, you know, we have a training philosophy that would be called crawl, walk, run. And of course, in that crawl stage, you're just kind of learning the very basics of a subject. Walk, you're demonstrating it and demonstrating some proficiency in it. And then in run, you're actually running that operation, of course. I would say right now, we are still in the crawl phase of AI implementation. I think we're trying to, number one, identify what tools are out there that are available, which ones are credible, which ones are not, which ones are reliable, which ones are not. And, you know, is it feasible for us to implement tools that are selected based off of any number of resources, whether it's financial, personnel, fill in the blank. So right now, I think we're still in a crawl phase. I think that from a federal perspective, I think we're probably a little bit behind the commercial sector, the corporate sector. And I think in large part, that's just fine because we have certain regulatory requirements that we have to make sure that we are addressing. Certainly the corporate world has to deal with shareholders and, you know, it's not like you're dealing with just your own money. And of course, our shareholders are the American taxpayers. So we have to make sure that what we're doing is getting the best value added for the dollar. So right now, the short answer to your question, where are we in the process of AI implementation? I would say we are in the very beginning stages, not at the very, very beginning stages, but I would say that we are selecting tools. We've identified the requirement and we are selecting tools and evaluating which ones are applicable and feasible to put into place.
And as you've hinted already, this overlaps very closely with the cultural component.
It does. It does. And I think people are more and more getting on board with it. I think there's, you know, there's cautionary tales in pop culture, if you will, you know, whether you're talking about James Cameron's movie, The Terminator, or you're talking about something from George Orwell or, you know, fill in the blank. There's cautionary tales there, but I think also people are understanding that there is science fiction and then there is science. And there are plenty of applications there that can break through some of those cultural biases, particularly in terms of legacy stuff, that we're finding that there's a value added. And so I think that there's a very much a paradigm shift or a cultural shift that's in the middle of taking place right now. And as it gets closer to moving into something a little more progressive, I think you'll see that timeline accelerated for implementation. so long as the right governance is in place and the guardrails are on.
And this is culture as it relates to the adoption of AI. But you've noted, you've emphasized at the beginning that culture is actually a huge component of the whole knowledge management process. So do you want to tell us about more about the cultural component?
Sure. So the cultural component is knowledge sharing culture. You've got to have a knowledge sharing culture. You've got to promote an organizational culture that values and rewards and shares that knowledge. You've got to encourage open communication and collaboration among employees. There can't be one of those situations where everyone is so territorial of their given work stream or wave or function. It's got to be cross-cultural or cross-functional. Leadership support. I cannot say it enough. If you do not have a champion on this, you're dead in the water from the start. Gaining commitment from leadership to foster a culture of continuous learning and knowledge sharing is the first thing that needs to take place, because obviously what's important to your boss is important to you. And if those things are not being championed, they'll be looked at as simply another thing to put on your backlog. So cultural component, I think, you know, those two things, having a knowledge sharing culture and leadership support, are essential in making sure that that component is up and running.
And on this, Jason, one thing I'm curious about is the following. You know, the theme of this podcast series is ecosystems. And something that we're seeing across the board is, it also relates to something you mentioned earlier, which is limited resources, hence the need for knowledge management to be aimed at value creation. But the fact that there are limited resources, combined with the fact where we are in a world where value is often found more and more at the intersection of different disciplines, we are seeing more cooperation across different entities. So this ecosystemic approach, we're seeing it developing more and more. Part of it, as you look at the aerospace industry, is increased cooperation between government entities and commercial aerospace entities. And so you're talking about the ecosystems, which now are starting to span very different organizations. So organizations that have operated in different worlds, different environments, and therefore have developed very different specific cultures. Now, these, as you build ecosystems, they need to work together. They also need to share information, to share knowledge. The knowledge management sharing becomes crucial for an ecosystem to work effectively. So I'm curious your thoughts about, one, what do you see in terms of differences and tensions between how knowledge management is approached from a cultural perspective in the commercial sector, private sector, and public sector? And what are your thoughts on the best strategy to make the cultural component of knowledge management work effectively as we build these ecosystems which span different organizations, at times with different priorities?
Well, okay, that's a good question. I'm going to have to kind of unpack that one a little bit. I think that when it comes to differences between commercial, private, and public, what you're dealing with more than anything else is, what is the size of your decision cycle? I would say the commercial, based on scale, and public can have very similar decision cycles that are fairly robust and protracted, because it's not just one person making a decision, or either there are multiple entities to which you are accountable, whether it's shareholders, American taxpayer, fill in the blank. I think where the big difference or separator is in the private sector. When you take a look at situations like what Elon Musk has been able to do with Tesla and some of his other companies as well, the decision cycle there is very small, which has allowed Tesla, SpaceX, the Boring Company, even that is tunneling in various locations, actually one not very far from where I'm located. Those efforts have been able to happen at a much more rapid rate because the decision cycle is so small. Early on in Oracle, you saw this with Larry Ellison as well, you know, and I think as you see things move from private to public and the scale increases, that slows down a lot. So I think where our challenge is in terms of bridging gaps and reaching shared understanding, and it's really, I don't know that I have a solution statement, but I do have a problem statement, and that is, how do we take the deliverables and benefits from a decision cycle within a private sector environment and apply them in an effective way to commercial and public sectors? And I think that that's really, you know, one of those things that I think would be tremendous when it comes to how you get after this. Now, I don't know that completely answers your question, but those are my thoughts with respect to it, particularly when you talk about the differences between and how do you converge and how do you apply. I think there's a lot of value that comes from the private sector piece.
No, it does. I think you're exactly right, because your emphasis on the how small the decision cycle is, and therefore how do you build a system that ensures that decisions can be made quickly, while at the same time making sure that all the knowledge which is relevant to the decisions gets to the small circle of decision making is crucial. And the other part I was thinking of, again, thinking of the emphasis you've put on the cultural component, and you said we need a culture that values and rewards the sharing of knowledge. And it strikes me that both components, the valuing, so rewarding the sharing of knowledge, is as important as anything else, right? Because we all grew up with a sense that information is power, knowledge is power. So there is almost a human bias towards wanting to hoard it when you have it, because it gives you a comparative advantage. And so how, in the cultural element, how do you build the right incentives to make sure people understand that they are going to be rewarded for sharing knowledge, that sharing knowledge makes them, is actually a comparative advantage. If you're willing to share knowledge, if you have knowledge and are willing to share it, that makes you a more valuable component of the organization, much more valuable than if you are the person that is sitting there with all the knowledge in his or her head and people have to come and forcibly extract it from you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I think helps, and it could be viewed a little, you know, for the lack of a better phrase, cheesy or cliche, but put systems in place that publicly recognize that sharing of information when it happens. And it could be things as simple as if you're in an operations center and you've got a big screen and the supervisor recognizes that one of their analysts shared information with another analyst in another section that allowed them to decrease their decision cycle in terms of getting information that was decided upon, delivered in a timely manner, and assessed appropriately. Put that person's face up on the big screen and do the whole Kmart blue light special on the, you know, light, and, you know, ring a bell and say, "Hey, look at Mr. Smith. He just did X, Y, and Z." It seems silly, but some of the silliest things that we feel are a little silly when we discuss, when they're actually put into application, kind of become a game and a morale builder for people. And so putting those little kind of silly systems that publicly recognize and reward people almost instantaneously with recognition go a long way toward creating a culture that encourages knowledge sharing and information. I think also another thing that you have to do is money speaks. Financially reward people for sharing information that results in increased productivity. And again, make that information public. Promotions, whether they're lateral or up or vertical, you know, and make those known in terms of why that person is getting promoted. Now, again, you've got some HR things that you have to deal with there, but recognize good behavior, recognize exceptional performance, both monetarily and also in a public recognition type system, and make a little bit of a game out of it, I think has been something that we've found successful. Another thing to do is also to put, you know, we have like on our big operations boards, there's a big sentence under our executive dashboard that says, who needs to know? And everybody, whether they want to or not, looks at that thing every time they come into work. And so if you're thinking, okay, who needs to know this information? Just because if for no other reason than it's a post-it note on your monitor, or it's at the bottom of the leader, you know, the executive dashboard, it focuses you culturally to look at disseminating that information if it's relevant.
You know, it's an excellent point. And certainly your points on financial incentives and promotions speak very loud and clear to me as an economist. But the initial point you made, which is the recognition, and you said it may sound silly, and it may sound silly, but in a world where all of us are constantly chasing likes and thumbs up and impressions all over social media, it's not silly at all. It's clearly what motivates us. So it is an excellent, excellent point.
Yeah, no, I mean, people are motivated by recognition of their good work, and they should be. And if you do it in, you know, what would be sometimes deemed a silly or sophomoric type fashion, more power to you if it gets the desired result. Put a little blue ribbon on the corner of the analyst's monitor, you know, or fill in the blank. Those small little management techniques do go a long way in terms of creating a culture.
And Jason, I've disrupted a bit of the flow of your description of all the key components we need to put in place for systematic knowledge management. But if I remember correctly, something else you had mentioned is you had emphasized how knowledge management has to be a continuous process. So not just, it can't be something that we put in place there and then we forget it, it's done,
yeah.
But it's continuous. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, that's kind of the final component of knowledge management, right? And not final in terms of it's the last thing that we ever do, but it really kind of, even though it's the last component, it springboards us to come back around and do that continual assessment cycle. So what is continuous process, right? It's feedback loops. You got to continuously assess and refine knowledge management practices based on feedback and changing organizational needs. It's got to be adaptive too. It's got to be flexible to new knowledge, technologies, and business conditions. So when we talk about that last component is continuous process. It involves feedback loops and adaptability, which obviously talks about assessments, continuous assessments, which is one of those items that is commonly referred to in risk management frameworks across the world, is you've got to continually assess, do the mitigations that I had in place for this risk, are they still relevant? Is the trigger date still accurate? What's changed from the time this risk was entered to the time that we're discussing it in real time? So assess, it's a continuous process. You know, there's a few examples of knowledge management practices that kind of help assist this. One, you know, you've heard it referred to several times is a community of practice, right? Groups of people who share a common interest or expertise, and then they collaborate to share knowledge and solve problems. Those communities of practice are great tools. Lessons learned databases, and not lessons learned archives, but lessons learned databases, and having checkpoints in place to go back and revisit those so you aren't having to make the same mistakes and essentially go around that mountain again and again and again. You know, what is it they say? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again,
a different result.
Learning lessons learned and putting those into practice helps you not do that,
Repositories of knowledge gained from past projects and experience, those things have to inform future work. And then mentoring and training programs, right? It's all about people at the end. You know, we can put all the things that we want in place, but if we don't have competent, motivated, skilled people in the right place at the right time, then it's all for naught. You've got to have formal programs that pair less experienced employees with seasoned experts to facilitate some of that knowledge transfer. Because there's going to come a time where that one guy that's in the office that everybody goes to get the answer is either going to be sick or on leave or have retired. And so are we building our bench? Are we getting depth? You know, you take a look at sports teams across the board. Those that are successful are deep. You know, it's more than just the starting lineup. There's a bench that can come in and support and next man up philosophy. And so those are the things that mentoring and training programs, I think, get after. And those are just some examples of community or knowledge management practices that do help as you get after those key components, which we've been talking about for a while.
And, you know, there are a couple of questions that come to mind in terms of this continuous process aspect of knowledge management. One is how robust is the wrong way of characterizing it, but the extent to which it does or does not need to be adapted, depending on the cycle time of specific project and specific missions. So what I have in mind, Jason, is, for example, you will have some business projects in the private sector that can be relatively short-lived. You're rapidly launching a new iteration of a digital application, and that has to be done fast, and then you want to push it out, and you'll get the market feedback relatively quickly. At the opposite extreme, you have some of the space exploration programs where now, if you are at NASA or also in the commercial, on the commercial side, and you're thinking about going back to the moon, you're thinking about getting to Mars. These are very, very long-term ambitious projects. And so in terms of assessing, reevaluating what you're doing and putting aside the lessons learned and making sure they are accessible easily as a database, I'm wondering, does this kind of continuous process need to differ depending on whether you're looking at a fast, short-term project or a very long-term one? Or is the same setup perfect for both?
I think when you talk about small scale or small duration projects versus large scale or long-term projects or programs, there are some basic tenets that are applicable across the board. However, I think there are some key elements that need to be in a KM program for a large-scale technical project, specifically a technical project. And, you know, I would like to talk about a few of those right now, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the first one I can think of would be knowledge capture and documentation, right? So this one, because you're dealing with so much technical data, I think it's important that what you have in place requires a systematic recording of knowledge from project activities, lessons learned, and best practices. So I think the key word there is systematic. You almost have to kind of have a punch card piece in place, because what you're going to be doing, you know, they say one measure of success is doing routine things routinely. We have to be able to do those routine tasks on a routine basis, and having a systematic approach is going to assist you in doing that. Also having structure, obviously. A structured documentation process should be in place to capture both explicit and tacit knowledge from team members, project reports, experiments, simulations, any other relevant sources. So knowledge capture and documentation would be one of those elements. And I would think that the things you'd want to emphasize are that it be systematic and structured. Another element would be knowledge repositories. Okay, so I think it's important that you establish centralized and accessible repositories for storing knowledge. Those should be things that people don't have to go hunt for. They should be readily available and easily accessible. In other words, it'd be collaboration tools. You've got to have those collaboration tools in place. And I know we've talked about it throughout the meeting, but it's so important when it comes to some of the things that we're discussing right now. You got to implement collaboration tools to facilitate knowledge sharing. And you also have to make sure that you have tools that can enhance communication and information flow. Whether it's something that is a discussion forum or a video conference system or a project management software. You know, one of the things that we rely on heavily in our program in the DA is a robust implementation of Microsoft Power platforms. So we are very heavy into Power Apps and Power BI to drive our executive dashboards, which do that and allow us to enhance that communication and information flow through those different technologies. So those collaboration tools are important. Searching and retrieval systems. You've got to be able to have quick access to that information. Let's say that the floor chief is wanting to find some information about something that is going to help him make a decision. And it takes 30 minutes or an hour or a half a day to find that information that they're looking for, when it's something that, if designed correctly, could take 5 minutes at max. So having quick access to that required information is important, and that's what you need to get after when you're doing your search and retrieval systems. Training and development, particularly when dealing with high technology, long-term, large-scale projects, is so important. You've got to provide continuous training and development to resources to ensure team members and stakeholders are familiar with KM systems and processes. This includes knowledge transfer initiatives such as mentoring, which we've talked about previously, workshops, seminars. Those things need to be a regular part of what you're doing. Culture, culture, culture. We've talked about it, right?
Yep.
Promoting a culture that values knowledge sharing and collaboration is critical. This can't be a secondary thing. It's got to be something that people are interested and motivated and excited about being a part of. They've got to be policies and recognition programs, incentives that encourage openness and knowledge contribution, which is necessary to support the culture. Silo should be a dirty word. It's something that people should cringe
at.
Proprietary knowledge should be taboo. These are the things that have to be in place for a successful implementation. Evaluation and improvement. Kind of goes back to that assess piece, right? Regularly evaluating the effectiveness of knowledge management and knowledge management activities and making the necessary adjustments, right? It includes monitoring usage, gathering feedback from users, and analyzing the impact of that. And then you've got to have the right governance and leadership in place. Otherwise, again, it's all for naught. You've got to establish, and this is very important, clear governance structures with roles and responsibilities. If there is any ambiguity in terms of somebody's role and responsibility or scope, you have induced margin for error. Now, that's not to say, because I think a lot of times when you refer to clear governance structures with roles and responsibilities, people could misconstrue that to say, well, that's not in my lane, or this isn't in my lane. That's not what we're talking about at all. What we're talking about is people have a very clear mandate in terms of the intent, their key tasks, their responsibilities, and how they contribute to mission success. That's what we're talking about here. And if people understand where they fit in the world, they're much more willing to step out there on a ledge and exercise initiative as opposed to guessing about whether they should or should not get involved in something. And creating that kind of culture is what's going to allow people to get more cross-functional in terms of their activities, particularly if you're rewarding that good behavior. And then leadership commitment, right? Leadership commitment and support are vital to ensuring that these initiatives are aligned with organizational goals and receive the required resources. Again, by integrating these elements, NASA can develop and maintain a knowledge management program that supports the complexity and scale of its projects, and that can ensure valuable knowledge is preserved and that it's accessible and it's effectively utilized. So those are the things that I take a look at, particularly that I like to emphasize and that I think are incredibly important when we're talking about large-scale, long-term technical projects or programs. Got to take those key elements into account.
That's extremely, extremely persuasive. I have to say, I love your repeated emphasis on culture. I'm based in Miami. The gym I go to has a motto which says, culture is everything. So I see it every morning when I go to the gym. I see it on the wall. And very often I find myself reflecting and think that is so true. When I see things around me in the environment I operate in around the world, and I think, yep, that culture is everything is really, really true. Jason, I know I'm abusing your patience, but I have two more questions, if I may.
Sure.
One is the following. You've highlighted very well how to design proper knowledge management systems. A lot of it is culture. There is a lot of flexibility required. There are also processes. Every time we put in place processes, there is the risk of some rigidity setting in. And in a world which is more and more uncertain, more and more in flux, and with more and more of a need for ecosystemic approaches, we also need to be more and more open-minded. So my first question is, in knowledge management, how do you ensure that people keep looking outside the obvious? They keep their eyes open for something that might not seem relevant now, but might well be relevant tomorrow.
Yeah, I think what they have to do is they've got to take a look at some key benefits of knowledge management. I think that one of the things that they have to look at is, where are they finding value added? I think when it comes to things like enhanced innovation or improved efficiency or even better decision-making, a competitive advantage, those are some of the things that I think you have to take a look at when you are looking outside of your static norms. And you can find those things across the board, not only internal to your program or your organization, but external, and bring some of those things in or push some of those things out. You know, you've got to have access to diverse ideas and expertise that foster creativity and the development of these solutions, right? Also, I think if you have improved efficiency, it obviously reduces the time spent searching for information and it avoids a duplication of effort. So that's one of those things that's important. Everybody wants better decision-making and tools in place to do that. It provides a robust foundation of knowledge to make informed and effective decisions. And everybody wants that. And then, of course, everybody, whether you're talking about the kid in the kindergarten schoolyard or you're talking about the mission chief at NASA, everyone is wanting a competitive advantage. And so you've got to enable organizations to leverage their collective knowledge to stay ahead in the market. Otherwise, if you aren't moving forward, you know, even if you're staying still, you're moving back.
And this is something that you have lived and breathed, Jason, right? Because this is not theoretical. This is happening now. The improved efficiency side is something that you have experimented on the ground. You have seen these increases in efficiencies arising from the application of better knowledge management processes.
You do. And I think when you take a look at, you know, there is a reason that people go after Lean Six Sigma black belts.
Yeah.
It's not just to make their LinkedIn profile or their resume look better. There's a reason those things stand out. It's because you're looking for where are those gained efficiencies that can increase my productivity? Where are my bottlenecks? How do I remove those barriers? How do I make agile program management a reality as opposed to a theory? One of the things that we have a real challenge with in the VA is agile practices in theory for federal government work very well. Agile practices in application in federal government have a twist to them. So how do we get after that? Well, there are scaled agile practices that we can do. And so when we're taking a look at the value train and moving it to left to right and doing the necessary adjustments that we need to make sure that agile works for us, we're taking a look at some of those things we're talking about: enhanced innovation, improved efficiency, better decision making. Where are we finding that competitive advantage? So again, it goes back to culture. It goes back to continuous assessment. I think those things are incredibly important, and I just can't say enough about them.
Jason, this has been a fantastic conversation. I think you've given a very, very clear picture to our audience of, first of all, what knowledge management is, why it is so important, how to put in place, to put it in place effectively. And I think our audience now also understands why effective knowledge management along the lines you explained is especially important in a more complex, more ecosystemic world like the one we're living in. So Jason Graham, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Oh, listen, you're more than welcome. And, you know, just in closing, I just want to remind the folks out there that, you know, what we're talking about is a dynamic, integrative discipline. It's focused on using an organization's collective knowledge to achieve those better outcomes, to drive innovation, and to maintain a competitive edge. It's about creating an environment where knowledge is actively managed, shared freely, and used productively. So thank you very much, and I wish the best to you and your team.
Thank you. Thank you so much again, Jason. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today as we've explored how systematic knowledge management and enterprise risk frameworks can create organizational ecosystems that adapt and optimize performance in the face of uncertainty. Please check out this season's episodes as we continue examining how systems thinking can transform our approach to complex challenges from Earth, orbit to Mars, and beyond. And subscribe on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast diet from, and you can find more at shoshinworks.com. Thank you so much, everybody.